the Digital Leaders Podcast, Episode 9, Nick Williams. Technology is changing the way we connect, learn, and do business. On this season of the Digital Leaders Podcast, we sit down with some of the UK's most influential thought leaders in government, enterprise, and entrepreneurship to learn more about what they are doing to digitally transform themselves and the organizations they lead, why it matters, and what we can do as listeners to build our own prosperous, digitally enabled, and connected communities. The time is now. The place is the Digital Leaders Podcast, and the future is digital. Hi, guys, and welcome to episode 9 of the Digital Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Ferguson, and I cannot believe that we are already on episode 9. That seems kind of crazy. But on today's show, I am super excited because we are joined by the Managing Director of Commercial and Business Banking Transformation at Lloyds Banking Group, Nick Williams. Now, Nick grew up in Manchester. He graduated from Loughborough University with a degree in chemical engineering and worked as a consultant before starting his career in the banking world in 2006. A passionate advocate for digital literacy across the UK, he sits on the board of both Digital Leaders and the Mercy Care NHS Foundation Trust, and is very passionate about helping individuals and organizations acquire the tools and skills necessary to thrive online in the digital age. On today's show, Nick shares how Lloyds Bank has evolved their offerings and services to meet the demands of their growing digital customer base, what Lloyds is doing to help the 21% of people in the UK who still do not have the 5 basic digital skills, according to the 2018 Lloyds Bank UK Consumer Digital Index, and why he believes that as digital leaders, we need to educate individuals at the local level about the benefits of digital adoption if we want to ensure both digital literacy and equal opportunity for all citizens in the UK. So without further ado, please welcome my guest today, Nick Williams. Nick, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
So before we start talking about Lloyds and everything that you guys have going on, I wanted to talk a little bit about yourself. So you come from both an engineering and consulting background. So I want to know, how do you feel like that experience has helped you innovate at Lloyds over the last almost 10 years that you've been there?
Yeah, I guess as a chemical engineer by study and background, I've always had two things really, a desire to explore, to understand how things work, how things can work differently, improve things. And I guess the engineering being fairly analytical and data driven makes me want to understand the data and follow the data. The consulting experience has given me the broad experience of working across industries, different sectors, working with different organizations. And I guess where you see new ideas occur in one organization can be extremely innovative in a different organization. And quite often it's just about sharing best practice and understanding. And the lessons you can learn and having the feedback loops in place is a really powerful thing to do. And quite often doing the basics well is very innovative because people always struggle to do that. So I've learned that getting the basic foundations in place in all organizations is critical, and then understanding and exploring best practice from what you see from other organizations, particularly cross-sector, is a great way of taking an idea and a concept from one place, making it a transformational change in another.
And you mentioned innovation, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that because your organization has certainly seen a lot of innovation, I would say, definitely since you joined. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what you guys are doing, and specifically the recent announcement of the £3 billion that you'll be investing into digitizing the organization and why that is so important.
Yeah, I think the Lloyds Banking Group story really started back in 2008 when the crisis in the financial services globally happened. And
right.
In 2009 and 10, we made some choices about what we would invest in the merger of HBOS and Lloyds to create Lloyds Banking Group. And at that point in time, we made a decision to invest very focused on new digital capability for the combined entity. And it was really that platform which really gave us the momentum in where we are today. And coming out of that initial phase in 2009, 10, 11, 12 was, you know, a single digital platform that gave us the capability to serve our clients and the customers in multiple channels. So the digital platform works, yes, online, on mobile, but it's also the same platform that serves our customers who walk into branch and also make phone calls through the telephony center. So we have a multi-channel capability on new tech. And it was architected in a way that allowed us to address some of the legacy constraints that a lot of organizations have today. So a lot of the customization that we do and a lot of the agility that we need to be able to respond to the market is in the digital platform rather than the back end and the legacy platforms.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you've had kind of a critical role in sort of the evolution of that within the organization? Because I know you've held a number of roles there, but all of them have sort of had a lot of a technical component, I would say, or education piece anyways, with respect to technology.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a big component of technology in all the roles that I've had in the organization. I guess in 2013, at the end of 13, we created Group Digital for large banking groups. So we brought all of the digital capability into one place across the group. It was really to recognize that we were seeing a lot of change and momentum being built in the retail division, which is our consumer-facing businesses, the Halifax, the Bank of Scotland, the Lloyds, the typical branches you see on the high street. Mm-hmm. But we were seeing less momentum in our commercial banking space and our assurance company and the other businesses that we have around the group. And it was really recognizing that, A, we needed to be accelerating our response based on consumer behavioral change across the whole of the group. And two, really that we had to join the group up much better. And we had to change the way that we were working as an organization as well. So creating Group Digital really created the nucleus and the momentum that the bank needed at that time. And when I came in to lead for the consumer businesses in that role, we really did see an explosion of consumer behavioral change and shift. One of the first things we launched was the mobile app. So we had 9 million people using that app in the last 4 years. So the adoption of mobile services and the confidence that consumers now show to want to serve their own needs and open up new accounts and take new products online has just been truly remarkable.
Do you see a lot of confidence with people? There's not that concern about privacy or those other factors that traditionally banks have been hindered by when it comes to taking some of their products and services online?
Absolutely. And it still exists today. And I think there's a real danger that we think everyone is very confident, has the skills and the accessibility to be able to get online and do things. And, you know, I spend a lot of time talking and working with the government about digital skills, and maybe we'll touch upon that a little bit later. But I mean, specifically in banking, we've seen a lot of customers who want to take control of how they manage their finances, debt every day. So it's, you know, allowing them to bank when they want, how they want, where they want. And it's really empowering for our customers to be able to do that. And it allows them to take responsibility for their own money as well. But not everybody has that confidence. And it's about getting people to understand the benefits of digital and how it can enhance, how it can make them manage their money better, how it can make their money go further, and the benefits that they can get from accessing other digital services and products that's available on the web. But it's also about giving them the right skills to be able to do it and the right understanding of the protection that they need to put in place. And, you know, whether it's protecting your data, protecting your privacy, and the security that you need about it. And, you know, security is absolutely paramount for the services that we provide. You know, that is the number one priority for us, is to always make sure our customers are safe and secure when they bank with us.
Has the security thing made it challenging for organizations like yours to be able to offer a lot of their products and services online, do you think?
I wouldn't say it's making it difficult, because security has always been the number one priority of the organization. You know, all of our branches, number one priority is security and the safety of our customers and our colleagues who work there, to make sure we can provide our services in a safe and secure way. So it's just reframing and reinventing what security means in a digital age.
Right.
It does mean that we've had to invest heavily in terms of bringing the right skills into the organization, who understand how we protect ourselves from cyber attacks. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we focused heavily to make sure we're getting that right. But the balance is making something feel secure and being secure, but without creating huge friction in the process. And therefore, you know, a simple thing of how you access your service, i.e. how you log in, mm-hmm. is actually the most critical and crucial thing that we do every day. You know, I'll see 3 billion logins this year in the bank, and therefore it's the most frequent thing that customers do with us. It has to be secure and safe, but it has to be simple and easy to do. Otherwise, customers won't do it.
Right.
And when you think about the inclusive nature of this, asking people to remember information, whether it be a number, whether it be a password, is not always easy for everybody. So biometrics starts to play a big role in this in terms of having secure and strong authentication where you know something about yourself or you have something on your possession which can identify you. And I guess the mobile device is given that ability to do that because you have something in your possession, which is your phone. You have something about you which you could know. And you have something unique about you, which is, you know, your thumbprint or your iris, etc. And then the combination of those 3 things is what makes it really secure.
Interesting. I didn't really thought about that biometric piece as well. And so the other thing I wanted to ask you really quickly before we move on is you mentioned you'd have 3 billion logins by the end of this year from customers. Does that mean that you guys are seeing, or the banking industry will continue to see closures of the brick and mortar spaces? Or do you think brick and mortar will still be something that will be necessary and in every community?
I mean, multi-channel is the strategy that Lloyds Bank has, and we fully recognize that our customers need to make their own choices about how they want to bank with us. And we'll have preferences over which channel they generally use. We've seen a trend across the industry and across all industries with consumers wanting to have that empowerment to be able to do things themselves through a digital channel. However, we're still seeing high demand for direct contact, either over the phone and in branches, for customers who have more complex needs to discuss or in moments of truth. I don't see a world where we don't have branches or provide telephony support. It's simply a world that I can't imagine where a first-time buyer who wants to understand how to take a mortgage may not want to talk to somebody about to get advice on what the right thing is to do. Someone who unfortunately suffered a bereavement will need the help and support of our expertise and our colleagues to help them understand how to deal with the lost one's finances. A small business who wants to start up and grow, who wants to trade overseas, or may want certain finance in place, they want the trusted handshake of a relationship manager mm-hmm. who truly understands their business. Now, there's lots of things we can do with artificial intelligence, machine learning, to really surface up the insights and information for our customers and clients to be able to take control and do things themselves. But I think, you know, machines will never replace the emotional connection that you need to have in place to be able to support your customers fully.
Well, understandably so. I mean, especially with money, you know, with people's money, it can be such an emotional thing and it's something that you work so hard for. I think that it makes sense that people at the end of the day want to be able to talk to somebody.
Absolutely. And if you think about the real focus now on one of the biggest health challenges we have, certainly in the UK, and I expect globally, is mental health. And I also work for the NHS. I'm a board member of a mental health trust up in Merseyside. And I see firsthand when I'm working in the NHS, people who are suffering stress and anxiety, and very often it's driven through financial distress. So I get to see both sides of the coin because I get to see customers who are in financial trouble and we're able to help them and help them recover their financial situation and avoid them becoming creating further problem, but also, you know, maintaining their ability to carry on in everyday life. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I also see people who get themselves into a situation and a mental state that they require support from hospitals and medication because they've just been unable to manage their finances and manage the anxiety and stress that causes. So there's a huge opportunity here for the financial services industry to really up its game to help customers manage their money better, avoid them getting into financial difficulty, which has a real payback into the cost of healthcare across the UK, because the more people we can help to keep them financially stable, the less people we will see suffering from stress and anxiety because of financial strain, which then removes the burden on the National Health Service.
I like it. Financial literacy, digital literacy, it's all at Lloyds Bank.
Exactly. You're joining the dots.
Right. Well, and that's like another thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about, because one of the things that you guys are committed to is a big part of that education piece. And I wanted to talk a little bit about why That is so important to you. I mean, you guys are helping, you guys are offering services and classes to help people gain the basic digital skills. They don't even, I don't actually think they need to be clients. I think you're just, you know, going out to the communities and offering these skills because you recognize that it's not just about their financial literacy. It's about their overall mental health and opportunities for the future.
Absolutely. I mean, we recognized quite early on as we saw customers changing the way that they want to bank, that this needed to be inclusive for everybody. We couldn't design services which would only work for the most privileged parts of society. And it's important that when we think about designing services, we design for all ends of the spectrum. And similar to the previous question you asked me, which is, do people have the confidence to use the services? And do they have the skills to be able to use the services? And for large parts of society, that's true. But actually, there is around 20% of the UK population who don't have the right digital skills. There's around 11 million people. And yes, they may have access to Facebook, but they don't really understand how to use online services to help them. And that's been really important to Lloyds Banking Group, because our overall purpose is to help Britain prosper, whether you're a small business or charity or an individual customer of the organization. We want you to prosper in your future. And if we can help you in any way, shape or form to do that, and by helping people be more confident with banking online or just using online and remaining connected in society to address some of the loneliness issues that we have, which leads back to mental health again, we want to be there. We have a footprint in every community across the UK, and we have a responsibility to help our customers prosper in their future. And the same for small businesses, where we recognize that small businesses that start up today, they need to be able to take advantage of digital. Their customers are online if they're not. And there's nothing stopping other organizations through a digital platform entering their marketplace in the local community and taking their business. So there's a real opportunity, there's a real risk to small businesses. But as they want to grow, I mean, they can start to trade overseas. And the digital platform, you know, has no respect for geographical boundaries.
I think that's kind of a huge thing that you offer too, is that you enable small businesses the opportunity to even think internationally with their business, whereas before it was really community-based. It's a really big mind shift in a lot of ways, this whole digital thing, because people realize their customers are now global, but they need to be online in order to access that customer base.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so we see some new organizations who are digital by default. They're born digital because they have started up their organization during this revolution that we're going through. We also have a lot of standard, mature, traditional organizations who've been trading for, you know, many years and decades. And they've got to recognize that this digital revolution that we're going through is changing the way consumers behave, is changing the way that we live. And for them to remain relevant to their customers, they've got to respond as well. And that does, you know, means different things to different organizations. But even your local window cleaner, your local butcher, you know, they can get their message out to what services they provide and market themselves through a simple Facebook page. And that's where their customers are every day. You know, they're socially interacting with their friends and families, making referrals between themselves in terms of where to go and get the best local service from. And you need to be in that shop window. It is the digital high street.
So you're talking about small businesses and why they need to be online. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the indexes that you guys publish, because you publish two a year, a consumer index and a business index. There's a lot of really interesting information in there. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how you guys use this information year upon year to create more products and services for the country, and how other organizations can use it as well.
So we've been doing this for 5 years, and tomorrow I launch the fifth annual business and charity digital index here in the UK.
And we missed you by a day.
By a day, yes. Which means I'll probably give you some headlines.
The new numbers,
the day before. So we're launching the fifth version of this. We started 5 years ago because, again, it comes back to when I came into the role, recognizing to really know and understand the problem we're trying to solve, we need rich insight to the way people and organizations are behaving, both attitudinally and habitually. And so what we created was insight and research using the bank's data. So we have the second largest customer database in the UK. The only organization that has more customer data is the NHS. So by using our data and understanding small businesses and customers' behavior in their bank accounts, we can understand how digital they are. But we also interview. So we spend a lot of time talking to small businesses and charities and consumers to understand their attitude towards digital. And we're able to correlate what they say they do versus what they actually do. Mm. And as you can imagine, they're not always necessarily the same thing. But what the data really gives us, But what the data allows us to do is, because it's statistically relevant and representative of the whole of the UK, we can understand, and we've now created that longitudinal understanding over the years, how the country is maturing in its digital skills. And what we've seen over the 5 years for small businesses, that effectively now 99% of small businesses and charities are now online. But back in 2014, 8% of small businesses weren't online, and a quarter of charities were offline as well. Wow. And that just simple headline shows that the progress of everybody understanding the opportunity and the benefits that digital can bring is, has started to land, and people have responded. I guess it's what you do once you're there. So we look at how well and how in depth they use digital. So are they just using it for marketing purposes and brochureware sharing information? Or are they actually transacting? So are they able to take payments? Are they able to do business deals online as well? Are they using social media, which is incredibly important for charities? The best way for a charity today to get their cause across to society, to understand what they stand for and what they're trying to help with, is through social media. So if a charity doesn't have a social media account, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, and all the other social media outlets that we have, then they are missing a massive opportunity to raise the awareness of the cause that they stand for. We also understand how things are progressing and which skill areas are progressing more than others. What we've been doing off the back of this is two or three things. First of all, this is not for our own purpose. This is for the UK purpose. And we've been sharing this insight and information with the UK government now for the last 5 years to help inform policy setting. And it played a big part into the overall government strategy for digital, which has been embedded into the industrial strategy. So it's really insight that's been used by everybody around the country to able to inform how they respond and how they create their own strategies locally to improve the situation. But what we've also been able to do is work out what propositions would help to work with small businesses and charities and consumers to help them. One of the concepts we have is the Google Garage. So we created the partnership with Google. We run events on a local basis. We typically invite somewhere between 150 and 200 local businesses in. And we spend the day together with tech partners, Google being the primary one, where we educate them in the room about the advantages of being online, the benefits it can bring, some of the analytical capability you can get from some of the tools that Google can provide. But the most important thing is we bring local tech providers into the room, and we offer them access to able to understand where they can get local support, you know, how to take advantage of social media, so that when the big brands maybe disappear and go to the next region to help the next set of small businesses, there are local connections with local businesses who can help them take it forward.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I think I read about that Google partnership, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that's just one example. And the key thing there is you don't need to bank with us. You know, this is open to any small business in that area. So again, this is our ambition to push for digital is a societal, it's a social mobility challenge for the UK. It's not a commercial initiative in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, I have to say, as a bank, I think it's really fascinating how much you advocate for digital literacy, not so much about necessarily about your products and services, but rather more from a desire to try and get everybody up to speed at the same level for the betterment of society rather than the bottom line.
Absolutely. This is about helping people prosper. It's about helping keeping communities connected, you know, avoiding people becoming isolated and lonely, and giving the people who are probably in most need of being able to access cheaper goods and services the benefit to do that. I mean, to give you a very simple example, I live in the northwest of England and I travel down to London. If I turn up at the train station and buy a ticket in the train station, it will cost me around £300 for a return ticket. If I go online a week before, even a couple of days before, and I buy the ticket, I can get it for around £50. So there are two things you need to reduce the cost of a train journey from £300 to £50. One is you need to be able to get online, and two is you need access to money to be able to buy it. And they're the two things that we care passionately about, which is giving people the right financial support that they need and access to the financial product and being able to be online to access the real benefits that digital brings. If you don't have the ability to do that, then you're excluded from the most powerful thing that society is going through today. And that's the social mobility bit that I really passionately feel that we need to give access to everybody who wants to be able to do it.
Well, congratulations then on your recent numbers, because 99% is pretty good, right?
Yeah. And I guess the key thing here about this, it's not a fixed position. So every year we look at this, what we realize is tech is moving so quickly that if you thought you had the right skills 12 months ago, then now you may not necessarily. I go back five years when we first did this. There wasn't a huge amount of talk about artificial intelligence. Come to today, that is one of the hot topics. So right. You've got to remember, you've got to continue to invest and continue to understand the opportunities and increase your skills to remain relevant and to remain in parity with where technology is now going. It's a continuous journey that we're on.
So speaking of AI, I did want to ask you, how are banks making good use of AI to ameliorate their services and offerings?
I'll give you two examples. I mean, artificial intelligence allows us to process huge volumes of data very, very quickly to understand and make predictions. And, you know, that can be used in a case where a customer may want to understand something, have a query. We now have chatbots embedded in our services, which allow customers to have conversations and quickly get to the answer to their query. In the past, that may have taken a phone call, it may have taken an email, you may have needed to go into a physical branch to be able to do that. And from a business perspective, artificial intelligence and machine learning gives us the ability to reduce our costs. So we're able to serve our customers more quickly and more efficiently by having this ability to process information quicker than we ever in the past. And it allows us to predict, which is the real value. So we can prompt our customers to think about something or notify them of something that may occur in the future based on the previous history and the previous behavior. And we can do the analysis quickly and the learning to be able to predict to avoid any future problems or take the opportunity moving forwards. So the other thing where we use artificial intelligence is to be able to predict patterns of a different type of behavior, which is a malicious behavior, which is trying to do damage either to our customers or to ourselves. So for our fraud models, we can use the artificial intelligence to really understand patterns of fraudsters to be able to predict what they're going to do and to protect ourselves. We can use the analytical model for credit decisioning so that we can understand creditworthiness of our customers and our clients to avoid, you know, overlending and customers overborrowing. And we can use the artificial intelligence again in terms of protecting ourselves from cyber attacks and understanding the patterns that they go through and be able to respond very quickly. So I guess it's the combination of having large volumes of data, the processing power that we now have available, and the ability to store that data as well in the cloud, which gives us the huge capacity. And if you put the machine learning, artificial intelligence around that, you can bring that all together in one place and create huge benefits for your end customer and yourself.
Very cool. Yeah, I know. I have a girlfriend that has a company that does chatbots for banks, and they literally now, if you wanted to get your balance or find out if you can afford to buy that outfit or go out for dinner or change your savings, you can do that all via your chatbot. And there's no need for you to call anybody or anything like that. It's very, very fascinating.
It is. It's incredibly powerful and helpful for customers, because I guess there's one thing, which is you taking time to just check, and you can do that very quickly. Where the real powerful is the insight that we can prompt and nudge and notify our customers to say, if you carry on your spending pattern as you did in the previous month, we've seen this purchase come out, you know, you could go overdrawn if you carry on. Or indeed, you know, you've got an extra £100 in your bank account at the end of this month. Would you want to move it into a savings account so you can save up? There's endless use cases where we can use this type of technology.
That's fascinating. I love it. I could use more of that second one. All right. Last question I have for you is, what do you think digital leaders can be doing across all sectors to help the UK take full advantage of the digital opportunities before us?
So I think that the key thing I would ask is, we can talk about this at a national level, but we're only truly going to get the engagement at a local community level, because the people we really need to engage with, motivate, and get them to see the benefit by default are not online today. And therefore, we have to connect in the communities so that they understand that opportunity and make it equal for everybody to access digital services going forward.
I like it. Alrighty, so now we're going to go into our lightning round. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions and you're just going to tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Okay?
Okay.
The one book I would recommend to all listeners and why is?
Team of Teams. And it's a fascinating read to understand how you need to reorganize the way you work in large organizations to be more effective and efficient.
Cool. The one person I would like to have lunch with is?
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
Nelson Mandela. How he transformed and changed the nation and was able to put his own personal situation behind him, which is an amazing thing to watch in history.
One thing people would be surprised to learn about me is?
I met my wife when I was 12.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. We didn't get married until later on in life though, right?
indeed. And we weren't always together. We went to school together. So yeah, we've been best friends and partners for a very long time.
Wow. God, you could do a whole interview on just that. How do you stay with somebody for that long? That's the next episode.
I God knows how she's managed to put up with me for that long.
Oh, I need to interview her is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. The advice I would give my 15-year-old self would be?
Never stop learning.
All right. There you go. That is it from our guest today, Nick Williams. Now, if you want to learn more about Nick and Lloyd's and or maybe find out his secret to a long, successful relationship, or maybe that's just me, then head on over to our website, digileaders.com/digital leaders podcast. You can find more information on Lloyd's and Nick there. Next week, we are back with BBC's Tomorrow's World alum and the founder and CEO of Teen Tech, Maggie Philbin. So make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you don't miss that episode. And if you are a Tomorrow's World fan, they have a one-off live special on BBC4 this Thursday at 9 p.m. So put that in your calendars as well if you don't want to miss it. That is it for this week's episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Ferguson. Thank you so much for listening. And we will be back next week with the final episode of season 1 of the Digital Leaders Podcast.